Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Sater. And at this point, all the commissioners, I think, want to have an opportunity to provide some opening remarks, and then we'll move on to the panelists. I want to take the opportunity to thank you all for joining us today. We began a comprehensive review of our rules governing media ownership in the summer of 2006. And this hearing is the fifth of a series of six media ownership hearings that the Commission tends to hold throughout the country. The goal of these hearings is to more fully and directly involve the American people in the process. And as I have said many times before, public input is critical to our process and will inform our thinking of these results. And I appreciate then, therefore, all of you all taking the time to be with us this afternoon. The decisions that we're going to make about media ownership rules will be as difficult as they are critical. The media touches almost every aspect of our lives. We are dependent upon it for our news, our information, and our entertainment. Indeed, the opportunity to express diverse viewpoints lies at the heart of our democracy. A robust marketplace of ideas is by necessity one that reflects the diverse perspectives and diverse viewpoints. Now, our media ownership rules are intended to foster three core goals: competition, diversity, and localism. Many who have commented in this proceeding, including at hearings such as this one, express significant concern about increased consolidation and the preservation of diversity in the media. And I anticipate this afternoon, this evening's hearing, we'll hear many more of thoughts like that for tonight. Now, also critical to our review of the media ownership rules is exploring and understanding the competitive realities of today's media marketplace. Many of you here are likely familiar with the changes that are taking place, even here in your local paper, the Chicago Tribune. And you might also know that some of our rules have not been updated for years and may no longer reflect the current marketplace. Indeed, the Third Circuit recognized this. Several people referenced the Third Circuit case when it actually upheld the Commission's elimination of the newspaper broadcast cross-ownership rule. It's our task to respond to that court by ensuring that our ownership rules take into account both the competitive environment in which media companies operate today, as well as ensuring we continue to promote localism and diversity. And with that, I would like to return for a moment to those issues of diversity in the media. In order to ensure that American people have the benefit of a competitive and diverse media marketplace, we need to create opportunities for different, new, and independent voices to be heard. The Commission needs to be committed to expanding opportunities for entry into media ownership and media programming, as well as other communication services. Indeed, at our previous ownership hearings, many people have argued that the impact of media consolidation that has already occurred has had several negative impacts. First, they've argued that the consolidation has limited the number of channels available to minorities and new entrants. And second, they've argued that it has made it more difficult for independent programmers to get access and get on the air. And third, they've argued that it has made it easier for large media companies at times to advertise products by integrating them into the programs without notice. Now, regardless of what the Commission does or doesn't do on media ownership, I think these are important issues that the Commission can and should take steps to try to address. Now, first, the limited number of channels available in the broadcast television and radio spectrum bands and the high startup costs of trying to build a broadcast station are significant barriers to entry to anyone who wants to try to enter and become a broadcaster. It can be very difficult for anyone, but especially a new voice or a new entrant, to find an available channel, gather enough capital to build a new broadcasting station. I believe the Commission can and should help small and independently owned businesses overcome these obstacles by allowing them to lease some of existing television stations' broadcast spectrum and distribute their own programming that way. As we've heard, all television broadcasters are required to begin broadcasting digital in 2009. This conversion to digital enables broadcasters to fit a single channel of programming into a smaller amount of spectrum. Often there's additional spectrum left over that could be used to air additional channels. Small and independently owned businesses should be able to take advantage of this extra channels and its unused capacity and operate some of their own broadcast channels. These new stations would be able to operate their own programs and obtain all the accompanying rights and obligations of other broadcast stations, such as public interest obligations and carriage rights on cable and satellite systems. And moreover, we have very similar policies to this in low power FM and leased access on cable systems today. Indeed, before I came here today, I was on a tour of WVON with Melody Spann Cooper, who I have to say didn't tell me about the shortcut to get here, so that's why I was late. So I should follow her. Should have followed her more directly. But she was talking about how they've gone from a 1,000-watt to a 10,000-watt radio station, and they've been able to do it by arranging a unique leasing arrangement with another company. We're going to hear more about that today. So that's allowed them to get additional access to capital to be investing in the network, their broadcast station, to be able to get a message out. And these other kinds of real-world examples of similar type of leasing arrangements provide us an opportunity to establish a similar system in broadcast television today. Now, there's also one example of that going on in television today. Post Newsweek has begun to lease out to Latino Alternative TV programming for one of its multicast channels in Miami, Orlando, Houston, and San Antonio. And the commission is currently considering whether we should be adopting this idea of allowing small and independently owned programmers to lease out capacity on broadcast stations for qualified designated entities. And I encourage all the commissioners to take a look at that. And I think that will provide an important opportunity for us to try to provide an avenue for people to have a new and independent voices in the markets. Now, in that same rulemaking, the commission is also seeking comment on several other proposals that are critical for new entrants. And specifically targeted for qualified designated entities to be able to get into broadcasting, for example, by allowing them to purchase expired construction permits and be allotted additional time to go in and build a broadcast facility where someone else has a construction permit and they haven't built out as they're supposed to. And in addition, and I was talking about it with Martin King before, just before the hearing, the commission has been and will continue to recommend that Congress reestablish the minority tax certificate program to allow for people to have tax benefits as they're investing in broadcast facilities. Now, second, many argue that in today's media environment, it is oftentimes difficult for independent and niche networks to get carried by cable and satellite providers. For example, the company, the Black Family Channel, recently announced it was giving up on becoming a regular cable channel and becoming an online-only channel, and that would no longer be shown on TV. And Rick Neuberger, their chief executive officer, was quoted in one newspaper as saying, "Today, if you want to start a new cable network, it's about as easy as it is to schedule a ride to the moon." Now, I believe the commission needs to take several steps to make it easier for independent programmers in this regard as well. For example, just last week, the commission asked whether we needed to limit the ability of large media companies to tie or bundle their programs. I think that offering cable and satellite channels on a more individualized basis and in smaller bundles and theme tiers could help benefit minority consumers and minority and independent programmers. I also think the commission needs to re-examine our cable lease access rules to better encourage independent programmers. Eliminating tying, giving consumers more choice, will be an important step toward leveling the playing field for independent programming voices, those not affiliated with the largest broadcast, cable, and satellite distributors, and competing channels that are owned by cable satellite. Under the current system, many cable and satellite owned networks are bundled into the offerings, not necessarily because viewers are demanding them, because the distributor has a financial interest in maximizing their distribution. Under a system in which the viewers do the choosing, those channels that do not benefit from a corporate parent will still be able to attract viewers and have an opportunity to get on the system on an equal footing. But you don't have to take my word for it. Several other people commented about some of the Free Press's recent arguments on things the commission should end up doing. The United States Congress, recent letter to the United States Congress, the Consumers Union, the Consumer Federation of America, Free Press, Communication Workers of America said, and I quote, "Cable companies act as gatekeepers over the programming that is allowed into the expanded basic package, preventing independent content producers from reaching viewers. By allowing consumers to vote with their wallets rather than forcing them to buy channels they never watch, the marketplace will respond by providing more diverse and higher quality programming that consumers will demand." And finally, I want to highlight one other media issue that is increasingly affecting consumers, At our very first media ownership hearing in Los Angeles, several witnesses raised concerns about the issues of product integration. In today's technology, TiVos and DVRs allow many people to actually skip over commercials. And as a result, networks may be turning to more subtle and sophisticated means of advertising by incorporating commercial messages into traditional programming. As these techniques have become more increasingly prevalent, there is a growing concern that our sponsorship identification rules fall short in their ultimate goal, to ensure that the public is able to identify both the commercial nature and the programming and when they're being advertised to. I believe it's important for consumers to know when someone is trying to sell them something, and that is appropriate for the commission to re-examine these rules. And so accordingly, I recently circulated a notice of proposed rulemaking to my colleagues asking whether we should re-examine these sponsorship identification rules. This is an issue that's been raised several times by my colleagues. Commissioner Adelstein has been particularly adamant about this issue. And this notice asks on whether it is necessary for us to go back and amend our sponsorship identification rules and ensure that there's adequate disclosure to the public. And I hope that the commission moves forward on this issue as well. So I think that it's important as we begin to talk about today, as we have at every other media ownership hearing, the impact that the potential consolidation has had. We look at all of the tools the commission has to try to address some of these problems. And I know that you'll hear from all of the commissioners on their concerns about many of these issues. And I think that it's most important that we hear from you. But I do think it's important that the commission begin trying to enact some of the reforms that can begin to address some of these issues that have been raised. Thank you all very much. And Commissioner Copps will now end up.